started because he felt it in something that he'd been saying all along. And as we moved, you know, from a visually concentrated society to a more auditory society. And so he actually wrote a very nice review of The Tuning of the World when it was published. He was a person who influenced a lot of my thinking, certainly, as he did many of us. The question that you're asking is just a general question, and I can't really comment on what is happening today because I'm not at the center of the research that's going on. As I told you, I left the university, and I'm, you know, in 1975, and I'm not really very interested in what goes on in universities or cities at the moment. But so I think it's a subject for someone else. But you're absolutely right. Our perceptions are constantly changing. And I think, as David Howe suggested, there is such a turbulence now of interest in the other senses, other than just the visual sense that we were all brought up to regard as being the primary sense, that there is, you know, we are going to be changing. We are going to be thinking more in terms of tactility. We are going to be thinking more in terms of sound. We're going to become more critical, I hope, of some of the things that offend the other senses. I mean, one of the things, for instance, it's not exactly an answer to your question, but it just occurred to me. In modern architecture, practically all the surfaces that you touch are flat. They have very little tactile sort of sensation to them. You go back to the old bricks, mortar, stones, and wood carvings and so forth. Go to an old church somewhere. There are some of them, some beautiful ones here in Montreal. And immediately you're into a much more tactile environment, right? The things that you want to, you feel you want to touch those carvings, you want to touch those that woodwork and so forth, so that's something that maybe will change in architecture. Maybe in architecture we're going to come into an era in which tactility will again become a feature of the architecture, because people will want it. You know, the difference between walking across this, there's no sensation on the feet. And that's why I took my students out the other day and said, let's walk around the campus. Take your socks off, take your shoes off, and walk around. And to my surprise, many of them held hands and walked with their eyes closed so they could really sense the campus. And when they came back into the class 15 minutes later, they came back, and there was not a single sound. No one spoke. I was amazed. I was honestly amazed that that sensation was that strong for those students, that they actually felt, you know, this thing that they'd never felt before on the soles of their feet, the dampness of the grass, the stones, the sand, the cement, the walking up the stairs and so forth to get into the class again. And so just that sensory experience was a very strong experience for them, and I think these are the kinds of things that are going to be happening, you know, in the future, as the senses perhaps, you know, some of them become enhanced and others perhaps become neglected again. Sorry, yes.
Of the expressway acted as a distraction. techniques as tolerant of certain noises where we sort of tune out, or on the other hand, where we exaggerate certain sounds for good or bad. For example, last anecdote, I have a mother-in-law who doesn't like classical music, so regardless of what volume is played at, she complains it's too loud. But if you play music that she likes, even if it's the room vibrate, she's perfectly happy. So if you're
well, they're two different things, aren't they? One's a psychological tolerance to certain things of your choice, and the other one is just a physical, thing. We do know that that sounds of certain amplitude heard consistently can be deafening, and you begin to lose your hearing. And it used to be called presbyacusis, when you begin to lose your hearing, and it was thought that it was just something that was natural. It just happened as we get older, like we get gray hair and we get wrinkles and so forth. We begin to lose our hearing. Well, there was a New York otologist, went and did a study with the Maban tribe in Africa. I think they were in, I can't just remember which country now, but anyway, he gave an audiogram to everybody in that tribe, and he showed that people at the age of 75 and 80 had the same hearing acuity of people with people that were 20. So there was no deterioration in their hearing. And his assumption was that it was because they were living in such a quiet environment. No mechanical noises, no sounds above 85 decibels to bother them. It's been contested, that particular study, by people who said, well, how do you know? There might have been other factors. Perhaps it was something they ate or, that gave them that immunity. But when we're talking about noise, we're talking about a physical problem, which can affect all of us and perhaps has already affected many of us in this room. With a certain loss in our hearing ability. Then the psychological question of whether you like something or not is something very different. And I don't know of any studies that have been done to show that blacks prefer, they can tolerate loud noise more than other people. It would be psychological if it were true. Of course, Carl Jung thought that the blacks were just a noisier race anyway, because they talked more and they liked to have more sound around them than some other races. But you're talking about maybe the prejudice of a Swiss man, a Swiss German, against people who are a little noisier than the Swiss Germans are, and they're not very noisy. So. Yes.
Things, yo, hello. Things, that's for Carl Jung and everyone who loves hip-hop. But it just seems to me like the rise in digital sound of all kind. And I was interested by what you said about how in Europe electricity runs on a 50 cycle and we seem to have a sort of unconscious memory of that and it's affecting us. And here in North America it runs on 60. And I'm wondering if you think that the rise of digital sound will in some way, what sort of, I know you're not right in the center of the research right now, as you're saying, but what sort of effect that might have on the range of our listening or the way that we listen?
Yeah, well, I said I wasn't at the center of the research, and that's true. I think there's a lot of research that should be conducted on that very problem. You've identified an interesting issue that could be studied. Yeah, definitely. You should do it.
I always bring those earplugs in my purse, and I'd like to know if there are many people in the room who do the same.
Many people who, I didn't hear the last part.
Carry earplugs.
Wearing earplugs. Oh.
Carrying them,
yes. Put up your hands, anyone who normally carry earplugs with you when you're in the city. My hand goes up as well. I sleep with them every night in Montreal since I've come here. I think it's something that an increasing number of people are finding necessary to travel with and to be able to put them in it. Perhaps you can enter into environments now with such intense noise. It could be a dress shop, even. It could be a restaurant or a bar. It could be, another place that you wouldn't necessarily expect to have an intensity of sound that could be potentially hazardous. But I'm afraid that is a fact. We have an enormous appetite for noise. Our culture has an enormous appetite for noise. We produce the loudest music that was ever produced. There's no doubt about that. And that's recreational. And I don't just mean rock. I don't mean heavy metal either. If you look at the history of Western music, it was getting louder, throughout the 18th and 19th centuries. And the orchestra was expanding, and we were getting more and more instruments in the orchestra so that the power of the orchestra was becoming more and more sensational. And that's what people seem to want. And then you get into amplification, and you get all kinds of additional problems associated with that, in addition to creating perhaps an appetite that we have now for louder sound than people did in the 19th century. There are signs, however, I think there are signs among interested people in reducing the amount of noise waste. Noise is waste. I'm talking about wasted sounds that are unnecessary. I'm not talking about whether you like to listen to your music at a loud volume or not, but if you simply go out on the street and stand on the street corner, 90% of the sound that you listen to there is wasted noise. It's escaped energy. I mean, if you could make a silent car, it'd be much more efficient. You know that. Because you wouldn't be wasting all that energy in dispersing it in the form of noise. You'd be using it where it ought to be used to make the car run more efficiently. And so I think there are a lot of people maybe starting to concern themselves with that. So I'm relatively hopeful about cities with regard to the future. Perhaps with a certain amount of education, we can also bring ourselves to a point where our appetite for loud sound is not quite as extreme as it has been up to now. I mean, certainly we've reached a kind of point of reductio ad absurdum. If you go to a heavy metal concert and listen to sounds of 115 decibels and have a temporary threshold shift when you leave that concert, and any otologist will tell you that a temporary threshold shift that happens in your hearing, if it happens too frequently, you'll have a permanent threshold shift within very few years, and there's no cure for it. So that's a message, I think, that we need to get out to younger people.
One more question.
At the very back.
I'm very interested in what you just said about automobiles. I'm part of a municipal political party called Projet Montréal, and one of our formal offerings on our program is actually reducing the sound in the city. So I would be very much interested in knowing what kind of measures you would suggest in terms of reducing the sounds of the city, the sounds that are negative.
Well, one of the things we should think about is that, and this is what's new in the soundscape, is that most of the sounds that you listen to in cities are owned by someone. They're owned by someone. There's more and more copywriting of sounds and being used by people for rhetorical purposes, to sell their own products or whatever. And I don't just mean advertising and jingles and things like that, which are pretty obvious. But, for instance, the sound of an automobile can be proven to be a copyright that is owned by the manufacturer of that automobile. And some of you probably heard about the famous case of Harley-Davidson taking Honda to court to sue them because they were duplicating the sound of the Harley-Davidson automobile. And when I was in Germany a few years ago, in Munich, I was approached by the people at the BMW plant in Munich, and they said, "Mr. Schaefer, we want to discuss with you the new BMW automobile, the sound it will make. What we want, Mr. Schaefer, is that when you're standing on the street and a BMW approaches you from behind, you say, 'Ah, I think I hear the sound of a BMW.' Now, Mr. Schaefer, what is that sound?" And they paid me a lot of money every day, and they gave me a BMW to drive around in. But unfortunately, I was not able to come up with the sound that they wanted. But you see, what I'm saying is that there are a lot of automobile manufacturers and other people that are making products, refrigerators and other things that generate sound. The same thing is happening with refrigerators, by the way. Refrigerator manufacturers want a sound in the refrigerator that when you walk past the refrigerator, you're going to say, "Ah, I think I want a beer." You know, you'll turn to the refrigerator. You'll use the refrigerator. I mean, they want you to use it. So there's a lot of that activity now taking place in the world. And there's going to be more. There's no doubt about that. Rights to stomach is something that used to be talked about. You know, where within a certain territory you could only sell Coca-Cola. So Coca-Cola had the rights to your stomach, you know, in that area, or McDonald's or whatever. You're going to find maybe in a future society that there's going to be certain territories where you will only hear certain copyright sounds by certain people who've paid a lot of money in order that you won't be able to hear anybody else's competitive sound. It's just a thought to end the talk on. Thank you.
Please stand for 1 minute.